Over centuries, Christianity has accomplished much which is deserving of praise. Its institutions have fed the hungry, sheltered the homeless, and advocated for the poor. Christian faith has sustained people through crisis and inspired many works for social justice. Yet, although the word Christian connotates the epitome of goodness, the actual story is much more complex. A story told in Paul Kivel's new book, Living in the Shadow of the Cross, which reveals the ongoing everyday impact of Christian power and privilege on our beliefs, behaviors, and public policy. It's a great pleasure to welcome Paul Kivel to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Good morning. It's good to be with you.
What led you to this project?
I have been doing work around social justice issues of peace and hunger and healthcare and access to housing for many, many years. And I began to see that beneath a lot of these issues was a fundamental worldview, a dominant Christian worldview, which had some core values, core concepts that supported our tendency to punish people who are poor or out of work or needy in some way, that gives us a fundamental tendency to believe that there's a manifest destiny in the United States that allows us to go other places and convert people to our way of living, whether that's democracy or Christianity or civilization, that began to see how things kind of held together by taking a dominant form of Christianity and holding it up to the light.
Do you identify yourself as Christian?
No, I am a Jew by culture and heritage.
So when you look at this issue of living in the shadow of the cross, what do you think is a good baseline for us to keep in mind of this influence and how it has inspired us?
I think one thing that it's important is to recognize some of the core concepts that show up in so many different aspects of our society. One is a binary framework of good and bad, and within a larger framework, a kind of a cosmic battle between good and evil, God and the devil. And in the dominant framework, many groups have been labeled the other, outside that circle of caring, that circle of community. Pagans and Jews and Muslims and heathens, heretics, women have been labeled, you know, the source of original sin and the temptresses. Often people of color as well, and certainly gay and lesbian and bisexual folks. So whenever we fall into that good-bad dichotomy and we're on the good side and they are the bad ones, we end up fighting battles against an axis of evil, and it leads to aggression and war.
And as you point out in the book, that if you say as an experiment, one day I put Christian dominance in the center of a piece of a poster paper and drew lines out to the other systems of oppression and began to tease out the connections, some of which are elaborated in the book. So give us an idea of what you were trying to illustrate.
One of the things is exactly that sense of the other. Another is that, a good example is in environmental issues. There's a core Christian concept that humans were given dominion over the earth. And, of course, we have tremendous challenges right now in terms of our environment and building a sustainable world. And the concept of dominion, control over, is exactly what has been used to justify so much devastation and destruction of the natural environment. And so we have to step back from that and look and see how that concept gets in the way of our solving, you know, pressing social problems. In the economic realm, we have an economy that's based on a free market. That means free from regulation. It's supposed to operate according to God's principles by the invisible hand. But we end up punishing those who are poor and rewarding those who are most greedy and aggressive. And we're in a depression, and we have a regular cycle of boom and bust within our economy. So when we look at any of the areas of our society, whether it's economic or social or political or environmental, we need to step back and say, what are the fundamental assumptions that are operating here in people's minds and in our institutions that prevent us from really getting ahead of and solving some of the problems we face.
Just in this country, didn't we take a step back when we, in the development of this country, said there would be a separation of church and state?
Well, I think that's an important founding concept. But you'll notice that it says church and state. It doesn't say religion and state. And so what that really meant to the founders was that not that Christianity wouldn't be dominant, but that no particular denomination could force people to be believers in that denomination. And so we still have a long way to go. Christian institutions have tremendous clout politically. We've seen that in our elections around issues of gay rights, around reproductive rights, around many issues around health care. And so we need to strengthen that separation and open up space for true religious pluralism in our society.
How much of that is political and how much of that is cultural?
I think both aspects are important to look at. Christian institutions have a tremendous amount of political influence in our government and in our state governments and local governments. Many of the denominations have tremendous economic power as well. If we look at the Catholic Church, the Mormon Church, the Southern Baptists, the Episcopalians, for instance, they own tremendous amounts of land and property and have tax breaks. They're funded by the government in various kinds of ways. So it's economic, it's political, and of course it's cultural. It's some of the key concepts that I mentioned earlier that underlie the entire system and tie it together.
So what do you think step one is in taking a step back and trying to sever some of those ties?
The first step, obviously, is we have to see the system for what it is and get beyond the veneer of, that Christianity is just all good and that there is a dominant strain of Christianity that, in fact, is very problematic for our society. The second is to begin to tease out how it works in different institutions and in different organizations and settings. And then the third is, throughout history, there's been a long line of people and organizations who have gotten together to resist Christian dominance, going back to people protesting the witch burnings and the Inquisition and Native American genocide. And currently, there's lots of people organizing against the dominance of Christianity in our society and on particular issues of anti-militarism and health care access and women's rights and all kinds of things. So the third step is to step up and get together with other people and address what's going on around us so that we can both build a sustainable environment, reshape the economy in ways that work for everyone, not just those who are richest, and build, really adequate social services that serve the needs of everybody.
And again, you don't feel that it is just Christianity. It's other religions that have an impact as well.
Of course. And, if we were in a different society dominated by a different religion, we'd have to look at that. But here in the U.S. and in Western culture and generally, for the last 1,000 years, Christianity has been the overwhelming dominant influence. And so this is where we need to start. It's kind of the elephant in the room. And it's easy to look at Islam or Buddhism or Judaism or any other religion and say, well, they are patriarchal or they are this or they are that. But the one that influences our everyday behavior, our domestic policy, our foreign policy, are Christian institutions and organizations.
But as we look at the world as a whole and many of the wars and the tragedies and the problems that we've had, you can look at just an overall umbrella of religion, not specifically Christianity.
Right. Well, religion plays different roles in different societies. And if we were doing a scan of the world, we would be having a different conversation. But we don't have control over or influence over even many other countries. What we can influence is our own behavior, our own government, our own policies. And this is really where we need to focus our attention. And that has a ripple effect out.
Paul Kibble is the author of the book Living in the Shadow of the Cross. The book is published by New Society Publishers. Paul, thank you very much for spending time with us this morning. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book, Living in the Shadow of the Cross. It is published by New Society Publishers. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.